where strategy gaming meets good vibes. No stress, just critical moves. Welcome to Critical Moves Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about morals in strategy and war games. And I'm joined by Nuno.
Hello, guys.
And Timothy.
Hey, everyone.
So in many of these games, you can control entire armies, nations, and sometimes you can decide the fate of entire civilizations. Can one of you guys tell me an example of this, please?
Oh, well, you have a lot of the war games, for example, where you try to control a real nation, an existing nation, and you have the options to commit to war, and war often means a lot of less than fun stuff.
So I suppose the best example of that would be World War II, which is a classic conflict which has been done many, many times in war gaming and in strategy gaming. Playing as the Nazis, is that okay to play as the Nazis, Nuno?
I mean, I'm going to give an answer that's going to get me in trouble, I guess. But I would say that you need to realize that you're playing a game. So, first off, I would say that it's okay to play as everyone. As long as you know what you're doing, you're mildly educated about history, you don't fantasize about being an actual Nazi. Or being a murderous communist also, so it goes both ways. As long as you, as long as you're educated, you know what you're doing, and you know that this is just games or pixels moving on a screen, I think it's perfectly fine to play as whatever you like, and there shouldn't be any moral dilemmas about it, because at the end of the day, I doubt it's a video game that's gonna make you into a Nazi or a communist or a murderous dictator. I think things go way beyond that. So yeah, I think it's okay to play as everyone. And if you're talking about war games like Tim was, so war games were especially designed to help you learn from history. They were created originally in the 19th century to teach officers how to think tactically and strategically. And for you to be able to do that, you need to put yourselves in the shoes of your enemy. And sometimes you need to think like a German general in World War II, or you need to think like a United States Army Air Force commander in the Pacific, or as a Japanese. I think like World War II tends to be the most contentious of conflicts, but I would say that, yeah, it's perfectly okay to play as whatever faction you like. As long as you just keep it to the game and you don't take stuff outside of the game and you don't start... there's always going to be a fringe of weird players who how do we call them? Wearables, right? I think that's the name that goes around on the internet, like people who fantasize about Nazism and like the superior... The myth of German superiority, which is a very stupid myth that's already been disproven plenty of times.
Tim, are you one of those weird players?
Very funny. No, I would say I disagree, though. I disagree with the idea that you have to be educated to play these games, because you can't expect everyone in the world to be educated about everything. And now, in this case, World War II is maybe a common thing, but you still have teenagers playing games. They might not have had a full history class. They might be from a country that doesn't teach the full history of exactly what happened. And then in this case, when you play a game like that, the game has the role to educate, especially when it comes to historical time periods where something really happened. And then the game has a duty to educate. That doesn't mean it can't be fun. That doesn't mean that it needs to remove something. It's quite the contrary. I think it has an obligation even to add every part of the war. And I think a lot of studios try to kind of not get cancelled by having some atrocities in them and so on. But if you're like a huge World War II managing game, like let's take Hearts of Iron, for example, which is a popular strategy gaming around World War II, it kind of omits this whole genocide thing. And I think that's a mistake because maybe it's an economic decision, commercial decision rather. and they make sense in a commercial setting, but I think it kind of hides what really happened. And by trying to be okay and correct, you're kind of giving a false impression of what really happened. And I think it's important to educate. And then, sure, maybe it would allow some players to commit genocide in a game, and you can argue that as being really bad, but then perhaps it can be a lesson itself. And I noticed that myself when I play games a lot, that offer these options. It kind of leaves an impression on you, and it kind of teaches you about what really happened, and it puts you in a position, and it kind of puts you in a position like, what kind of mindset do you have to be to commit crimes like that? And I think that helps prevent things like that happen again, rather than protect some people from some real things that happened.
I think it depends a lot on what game you're playing. So for Hearts of Iron has always been like classically a war game, and war game usually mostly focus on like the military aspect of things, and they very very rarely
not only focus on political and economic as well.
Yeah, I'm just saying like Hearts of Iron probably not the best example of that. But most war games would rather be focused on the war side, and I get it. It's easier to avoid the topic than to take it straight ahead. And sometimes companies that might want to tackle such a sensitive topic as the Holocaust and actually just the whole war was a massive humanitarian disaster. So there's a lot. And that's just not limited to the Jewish Holocaust. There's other stuff, like what the Japanese did to the Chinese people is also terrible.
In Hearts of Iron, is there not a mechanic where you can bomb civilian infrastructure?
There is.
You can bomb civilian factories. Uh-huh. There's a clear distance between, and what do those factories produce? They produce consumer goods, which fuel your economy, but it's all super abstract.
It's very abstract.
I think the point is that when you're playing these games, I don't think that the thought of let's commit genocide ever crosses your mind, right? I mean, it isn't supposed to, because that's not what the game is about.
Maybe not in World War II RTS or turn-based games, but if you look at a game like Stellaris, where you can start a species which is xenophobic, which enslaves all of its enemies, which can turn its enemies into livestock. And if you look on some of the subreddits in relation to Stellaris, some of the things which come up on there, you think, if this wasn't on a Stellaris subreddit, I would be deeply concerned for the person who's typing it. Things like, is it okay for me to enslave my own species? Well, hang on. No, actually, it's not okay. But then there's an entire game with entire mechanics, which mean that's a viable approach to playing those games.
Yeah, there's a very big distinction between fiction and historical fiction. And yeah, I mean, I think every game out there, almost every game, not every game, almost every game out there has murder in, like, incorporated in its core mechanic. Like, hey, let's go murder this tribe over there. Let's, you know, and then when you deal with something that's heavily fictionized, you know, alien species and so on, it becomes more of an arcade game in that sense, and it doesn't touch on as much, and it's more of like, yeah, I mean, you have movies where there's like serial killers and everything like that. I think that's okay, and it can even have you, some of your frustration that you let go of it thanks to that. So sometimes, you know, like punching helps you with your aggression. You don't become more aggressive mm-hmm. because you've punched a ball or something like that. It's a similar topic, right? But then, yeah, when it comes to something like World War II, I think you do have a duty to show what happened. Especially if you're playing like the grander strategy game that incorporates all different parts of the game.
I think we have a duty to be historically accurate in almost all games, and I think it, in the end, for me, it always comes down to this: is that relevant to what the game is trying to portray? if it is, then it should be in the game. And there's a couple of games that tackle some sensitive subject. I think This War of Mine, well, not a strategy game, tackles the real issue about civilians living in a war-torn country, which is a terrible, terrible thing. Like, I think most games just stay away from it because it's not... You're not supposed to be interacting with that. Not because it's more a war in borrow, just because that's not what the game is about. I think there's another interesting RTS strategy game called The Great War Western Front. Now, going back to World War One, and World War One is a much grayer area than World War Two, right? Because in World War Two, you knew there were good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
In World War One, things are just a little bit on the gray side to have you think about what you're doing is right or not. So, in World War II, you go play an online game, you kill Nazis, it's perfectly fine, no one cares. World War One, like, picking up on the Great War, Western Front, which is an RTS released in 2022, if I'm not mistaken, it's the only RTS game, I think, that does World War One justice to the scale that World War One was and the battles were fought. And I was playing it, and I came to the realization that it's such a weird thing to look at the game and think. And even the way, like, I'm even starting to get confused, because even the way the units are set up, because you're used to seeing individual units in RTS games, right? So you control one Space Marine, and you can control 20 Space Marines if you're in StarCraft. But here, you're controlling a battalion of about 100 men, and that unit control just like a single unit. It's just a bunch of guys you just throw around at the machine gun. And yeah, sure, 100 guys died, but 500 made it through. So is it worth it? Is it not worth it? So these are the kind of games that really make me think about, like, the reality of war and the reality and the nature of warfare, because these are the ones that really tug at your heartstrings, and you need to. If you're really invested in it, you start to think about it and how awful it must have been for the people there.
So wasn't it Stalin who said that one death is a tragedy, a million is a statistic?
Yeah, but Stalin was a sociopath, right?
Well, he was. But I wanted to pick up on something you said there about World War II, where you had a clear delineation between good guys and bad guys. Now, I think there's a counter argument, which is that the Wehrmacht, your typical German soldier, wasn't a Nazi, wasn't a bad man, wasn't a bad person, and deserved as much respect and care as what an Allied soldier did.
I have a very interesting counter argument to that, because a couple of years ago, while I was still studying history, I did an investigation on how did the news about World War II started to arrive in Portugal. So this was the thesis. Okay, so I was studying, like, regular newspapers from 1938, 1939, and 1940, and I was surprised to the amount of news you had about the awful treatment of people of minorities in Nazi Germany. So the myth that people didn't know what was happening or they didn't know what was going on is totally false, because if the news arrived here in Portugal, I'm sure the guys there knew about that. So this is just an aside. And I think that, of course, everyone deserves, as a human being, you deserve to be treated with respect. And if you're a prisoner of war, you're supposed to be treated with respect. That's not what we're arguing here.
Okay, we'll move on from real life history and focus on gaming subjects. So when I take it, both you guys have played Frostpunk
1 and 2. Yeah
1 and 2. There's a particular section in Frostpunk in the original game where your scouts find a cave, and there's a bunch of kids in this cave, and you're given a moral dilemma. Do you take these children back to your settlement and they survive, or do you leave them to die in the freezing wastes? Did you have a moral dilemma, or did you just think, this is a game, the decision has absolutely no impact, my aim is to win?
Oh, I'm terrible with those decisions, because I just try to make the good-hearted decision every time, so I just take the kids and maybe doomed my settlement, but at the time it's just like it was the moral thing to do. Yes, so we'll do it and we'll see if it works out or not.
And this is the thing. Do those games push us to make the right choice by how these decisions are presented, or do they leave it up to the player to make a decision based upon what's in their own mind? Do we get that pushed down a particular route?
Right. Well, I think that's exactly ties in with what I was talking about earlier, is that you have these kind of two ways to play a game, two ways to present a game. And I mean, if you're playing chess, you're not going to worry about your pawns' lives and like their feelings and so on. And the game of chess doesn't appeal to that or go in that direction at all whatsoever. And then Frostpunk tries very heavily, much like a lot of RPG games do, but then in a strategy game, which I think is very refreshing, very fun to try out. I mean, it tries to go in the other direction of, it's not just a game, but to attach yourself a little bit to it. And I think even Frostpunk, you could play both ways, right? You could play, let's try as hard as I can to win and not care at all about what's going on and just purely look at the game mechanics, but the game makes it difficult for you to do that. And I think that's mm-hmm. nice. And then you can play the game setting yourself up, like, what if that was really me? What if I was really in that environment? What would I do? What kind of morals would I try to abide by? And then I think that's when a game like that shines, and when you actually try to do that. Because, I mean, okay, the game can be a little bit harder. It's like a survival thing. But if you just play purely to win, it's not as fun. And then it really gets that power from those moral dilemmas. And those are really fun because it teaches you something about yourself. It teaches you how would I be in those situations. And it kind of teaches you morality in an indirect way.
So what is it about the presentation of that game that makes you want to play it as a role play?
So it has a lot of story elements to it, I guess. And I think a lot of strategy games are missing that. And it's the ambience, even the music, even the graphics, the notification when something happens, like something dramatic happens and there's like a notification and you immediately feel the mood shift. And that has impact on you. And I think a lot of games like, okay, they appear to the more, like, I guess, intellectual type of, like, trying to fix a puzzle. And that's also really fun. And I think that should be allowed. And you should be able to mass murder people without a second thought in those, like, more abstract puzzle-oriented games. But those are two different things, I think.
I have a question for you guys. When you play these kinds of games, do try to incarnate the character you're supposed to be playing as. So, for example, do you, when you're playing Frostpunk, do you act like yourself, or do you act like the mayor of that settlement? Al?
Well, I think, as Tim said, there's two different ways of playing it. For me, I always, with most games, I will try and play it as myself. So, in Frostpunk, I try and make the right moral decision. Even if I know that moral decision, such as when there's a group of engineers and children arrive at your settlement and you get to decide whether you welcome them all in, whether you tell them all to leave, or whether you let the engineers in and leave the children to perish in the freezing cold. And I always try and play these games like I am a good person. I am a good
allegedly.
Person, believe it or not. Okay, allegedly, but I am a good person. And I think, well, what would, if I was the leader of this particular settlement, what would I do in real life? And I think you're right. Frostpunk has all of these different mechanics or presentations that makes you care about these virtual folk. You know, every person you click on has a unique name. There's just something quite emotive about playing this game that makes you feel that you must play it from a moral perspective.
Yeah, but then sometimes you have a strategic decision that might feel really bad to do because you have to maybe abandon some children. But then if you take on the children, maybe like there will be too much hunger and you don't have enough food to feed them. And then like the colony will be threatened. So then you get like to strategy and morals and a combination thereof. And I think that gets like really, really interesting if you try to play as yourself.
And I think that's the beauty of that particular game.
Yeah.
Because it forces you to make those personal moral decisions rather than just think, hey, this is a mechanic and which is the best way to win this game. It's a beautifully presented game, which forces you to think, how would I act if I really was that person? Another thing moved away from Frostpunk, which I think is very, very interesting in games, is if you look at Rome Total War, where when you capture a settlement and it gives you the three options of occupy, enslave, or exterminate. You know, there's
different rewards, right?
Different rewards. So enslave, the population gets moved to your existing settlements and gives them a boost. Exterminate, you get a boost to your
money,
public order. If you exterminate, it removes the risk of rebellion from those settlements. But when you played those games, because I'm sure you both did, when you played Rome Total War and all Rome Total War Remastered, because they kept it in, and I think there was maybe some issues there. Do we allow slavery still in, or the mention of slavery in these games, because it is so incredibly emotive in society? What do you do? Do you make a moral choice, or do you make a pure gameplay mechanics choice?
So, answering my own question, I always play as myself. I think I always play as myself. So I'm a terrible role player. I could never play as something else or act as another character. So answering your question now, I would always try and just occupy the settlement and then deal with the problem. I don't even remember, because I played this as a kid, right? So it's not even crossed my mind if I was just looking at the rewards. So what made the most sense back then? But if we should keep this kind of mechanics in games, and I think we should, and it's a nice segue to another question that I would like to ask you guys, is this: shouldn't we learn also from games, and shouldn't games about historical settings be accurate as to what they portray, like Tim was saying? And I think that the fact that you're removing a mechanic like this from an existing game from 20 years ago by tackling a subject that was a reality back then, I don't think you're doing the world any favor. If anything, you're just removing the awareness that was something that happened. And I think this also goes to what Tim was saying, is that like by removing this kind of more, because this is actually like the only part of warfare that actually ends up mattering at the end of the day, right? Is what about the people? And I think by removing this kind of stuff, you're doing everyone a disservice, because you're just altering history. It's like, it's one thing if you never focused on it, but the fact is that slavery was such an important fact as to why the Roman Empire was so successful, that if you're doing a grand strategy game about Rome, it's very hard to avoid it, because it's ingrained into your economy, it's ingrained into your societal mechanics, so it's really, really hard to do something without that. Because like in World War II, just remember that for the most of the times, what was the front lines were really far away from the genocide that was happening. So if you're doing a military-based game, you can get away with that.
But coming back to Rome Total War, or coming back to Rome, you can include slavery in there, because everybody accepts that, you know, everybody's seen Spartacus, everybody knows that the gladiators were slaves, everybody knows that Rome profited from slavery.
Not everybody, especially young kids.
Okay, so not everybody, but it's a recognized fact that there was slavery. You can include slavery or a mention of slavery, acknowledge that it occurred, without making it an intrinsic gaming mechanic.
Yeah, but then you remove the player agency, right, from it, because you're removing, that stops being a game, and it's just something that's there. You're not interacting with it.
So again, I think like if we were talking about Rome Total War 1, the game feels very arcadey, and to answer your previous question, you know, to me, when a game gets like that, I don't feel any personal attachment to the generals or to my armies or to my civilization, and I just try to solve the game, and I just play very analytically, and I personally don't have any anything holding me back from committing genocide or something like that in a game like Total War Rome. Because,
but why would you? But why would you? Because there is, you know, if you look at Rome Total War compared to Frostpunk, every single person in Rome Total War, in Frostpunk, sorry, had a name. Every single decision was about individuals or about a small group, you know, and will you allow these 20 children who all have a generated name in there? Will you allow them into your settlement so that they survive this particular event which is occurring? Whereas in Rome Total War, it was just a number.
Yeah.
It was a number. You've got a settlement with 3,000 people. Do you want to keep those 3,000 people, or do you want to reduce it down to 1,200 people so that the settlement doesn't rebel?
And there's not a lot of effort made to make you care about any of that. And I think that's definitely something that they could do. If the Total War franchise wanted to, they could make a game where you start caring deeply about your people, about your family and so on, and accentuate that. And I think that would be fun, and I would play that, and then I would care about making the right choices and so on. But I also...
But can you ever imagine a situation where you would give a shit about people in a grand strategy game? If you're playing a grand strategy game, do you care about the individual?
How is it presented? How is the grand strategy presented? Is it like spreadsheets, and is it like the numbers, and you get plus 5% if you do this? Or, oh, look at the result of your decision. You chose to change the law to something like that, and because of that, this situation happened, and so on and so forth. Those are two very different things. And what does the game present to you? What does it accentuate? And I like both. I like both. And I like the analytical game to it. Like, not every game has to be focused on these moral dilemmas and so on. I'm okay with a game being very analytical and very strategic. And then I crunch the numbers and I try to, you know, play as best as possible. Those are just two different types of games for me.
Yeah, I think I'll touch on something briefly that I think it's very important, that the scale of the game is probably what makes you care or not care about, like, your small pixel soldiers and all that. Because how many of you have played, like, XCOM and cared about your small squad and made sure they all survived until the very end of the campaign? And it's different, right? Because you develop a personal connection with those small group of soldiers.
But also those small group of soldiers, because there's certain mechanics in XCOM where you can sacrifice some soldiers, leave them behind to allow others to move on. But not only do you have perhaps a personal emotional connection to them because they've been through the entire campaign with you, but as we see in other games, veterancy and experience matters. So is your rationale for saving a particular XCOM soldier because you have a personal emotional connection to them, or is it because
he's super powerful?
They are a veteran and extremely, extremely useful.
I think it's both. I think it's both from my side, because like I said, I'm the kind of guy that tries to put, whenever I'm playing a game, like, it's not the commander in XCOM leading those troops. It's me. So the decisions I'm making, they might not. I can recognize when I'm not making optimal decisions in games. I'm far from a min-maxing gamer. I'm actually probably the worst kind of guy for that. I know when I'm doing terrible decisions, but I know I can recognize that it was a decision I would make, and I would say that yes, I can grow attached to those soldiers and care about them. But yeah, of course, there's also an aspect of how useful are they? How useful are they to my team? But I think it, part of the fun is to make sure, like, you have your small bunch of guys and you can take them all the way to the end. But I have another questions from you, and I would like to discuss. I would like to you guys to discuss this, which is, what do you guys consider to be forbidden topics in strategy? So we talked about, like, the Holocaust. We talked about slavery in Rome. So what do you think is out of line for good?
Well, here's an interesting thing on that topic. As part of Steam Next Fest, which was back in October, I downloaded the demo for Commandos Origins, which is the Commandos have been around for ages, hasn't it? And when you first start the game, what I thought was really, really interesting, and such a something which people would probably just move straight past without even giving it a second thought, was you could decide whether to use historically accurate symbolism. So did you want to use the swastika, or you could click a button to use the Iron Cross instead? The swastika has despite being a symbol which is connected to some Eastern religions, it has a lot of negative connotations. Is it okay to include swastikas in games like this? The swastika's banned in Germany, isn't it? You can't display it at all. Is it acceptable to include accurate representations of symbolism of evil in strategy games, which are going to be played by hundreds, thousands, millions of people?
I think it's perfectly okay to include those kind of symbolism, because, like I said, like you can't ignore history, right? So history already happened, and there's no way you can go back and fix it. So I think the worst kind of disservice you can do to the victims of those terrible regimes is to just ignore that stuff happened. And I think games like books and movies have a responsibility to teach you about that. Of course, like, if you're going to release your game in Germany and it's forbidden by law to have swastikas, then sure, remove them. But if you're going to release a game like that in the UK, where it's okay to show them in-game, maybe you should keep it. If you're offended by that,
one
it's
exception.
Nice to have the option.
One exception, you know, if you don't mind me interrupting you, is like, let's say then you have an emoji that you can put on, and then it's a multiplayer game, and then you can, like, you know, spam the Nazi flag, and then it becomes like a glorifying thing, and then that gets into a really, like, different thing. So there should be boundaries there, I think. Like, glorifying it should never be...
I didn't consider that, but yeah, I guess you're right. There's also there's always an unhinged group of people online who like to do that kind of stuff.
And I think that brings us back to Nuno's question about should anything be forbidden, and I don't think it should be. I think that it's important. Gaming is such a huge industry. It's up there with movies in terms of consumerism. The amount of people who play games is significant, and it has a real ability and opportunity to educate people on what's happened in the past, and also not just what's happened in the past, but also on what the right thing to do is and what the wrong thing to do is. I don't think it's right that anything should be forbidden, but it is that point of glorification. You know, yeah. If you have a situation where slavery or Nazism or genocide, if you have the situation where you can glorify in those actions, is that really acceptable to put into mainstream pop culture? Because that's what games are. It's mainstream pop culture.
Yeah, as much as movies and music, games are... they're actually the largest entertainment industry in the world, and that's why I think, like, you should have as a game developer and as a company, if you're doing an historical game, you have the obligation to be historically accurate and to be as accurately as possible, and try to include as minimum of your narrative and your vision as possible into that specific time period, because one thing is what you think history should have been, and it's another to look at what actually history was. And I think this is where some new studios get a bit confused.
What gets confused?
New studios. Some studios nowadays get a bit confused. Well, they try to bring, how do you say, modern perspectives, way too modern perspectives into historical realities that never had them.
Do you have an example of that?
Ah, yeah, sure. So Battlefield 5, for example, what they tried to do with the amount of... What were they doing? They were like... there was like a Scottish woman with no arms or prosthetic arms fighting V2 rockets on the trailer. Like, it's just so weird. Oh, and it eventually even had like... some minorities, they were so careless with that to the point where you could play. And I'm not sure if this was on Call of Duty or on Battlefield, but you could play like as a Nazi soldier and a minority at the same time, which is super weird because, of course, the incident was not supposed to happen, but it did.
I think people get a bit too hung up on those things sometimes because you can make like a game about anything, right? Like you have time traveling Nazis or this or that, like and those small things I think are not like super important to focus on. But when you do ask about what should not, where the taboo line might be, I think, let's say we do a strategy game about modern day, current day, and then you start, you know, being able to assassinate real life people or wage war or genocide people that are alive today, I think that gets into an area you probably do not want to go to.
So it's okay to genocide populations from the 1940s, but not from 2024?
Well, I think if you do it at today, you're kind of...
Tim, you're giving Paradox a whole lot of ideas.
Please don't. No, I'm serious a bit, because I think it gets into too much of today's political debates. And I think it's okay to be political with some things and to have political commentary on today's life and so on. But then when it gets to some heinous acts that resemble too much reality, that's where fiction and reality starts to blur a bit too much for my liking. And I think I'm not a fan of taboo in general, but I think this is a line that does need to be... made.
Okay, there's another game that I picked up during the Steam Next Fest, which is called Drone Perspective. Mm. Have you seen it? It's almost a simulation, a modern day military simulation where you play the role of a drone pilot directing the actions of troops on the ground. And I played it and it was just such for what's quite a simple game, you know, you're just moving virtual men across the battlefield and shooting other virtual men, but it just really hit me that this is a video game of war. You know, if you think what actual drone operators do, they sit in a bunker or in an office with a joystick, a mouse, a keyboard or whatever, and they have a screen which shows what's actually happening elsewhere in the world with real people in real time, their colleagues, but also enemy as well. And this is a game which allowed you to experience what that was like. It was actually quite... For what is essentially an RTS game and not one which is from a AAA title, an indie developer, so it wasn't incredibly realistic in terms of how it looked, but it was actually quite a chilling experience to play that. Did either of you try it?
I saw it, and I have to say, a lot of people don't realize how much warfare has changed, and it has massively, and I think we haven't had... huge major wars as we're having today for quite some years, and then suddenly now there's this big war happening right now, actually not that far from where I currently live, and it's kind of scary to think about, but this game does offer you a small peek into what's happening there, and a lot of entertainment, if we can call it that, is that, right? Like a peek into real life, and whether it's the past or today. It is not political at all, though, as far as I can tell, this game. It's just purely a tactics game.
It is. It isn't political, you're right. But it raises another important question. Do these games desensitize us? And I don't want to talk about your Battlefield and your Call of Duties and your Modern Warfare and all that kind of stuff, which I just can't play, but do these games where you can control armies of modern units and send them into battle with other armies of modern units, do these desensitize us to the horrors of war? And is that an acceptable thing for games to do?
I'm not a psychologist, so I can't.
I am sure.
I can't give my professional opinion on it. But as an historian, I think there's an games don't desensitize people. I think that has been proven many times before. Games don't make people violent. Games don't turn people into raging animals. I mean, it's just 99.9% of the people know that when you're playing a video game, like, it begins when you boot the game up and it ends when the game shuts down.
I'm not talking about a situation where someone's going to play a game like, I know we said this strategy games, but Grand Theft Auto, then go out and steal cars and run over grannies. I'm not talking about that kind of situation. What I'm talking about is that, like with this drone perspective game, it's giving you an insight to what it must be like to be.
If anything, it should make you more empathetic, right? Because you're experiencing the reality of war from what's supposed to be a real perspective.
But does it? And this is the thing: does it make you more empathetic, or does it make you more desensitized
to the realities? Depends how it's presented, right? Like, if you have like a splash screen, yeah, combo breaker, you've just killed like this many and so on, then maybe it does desensitize then, but then at the same time it goes away from the realism at the same time. And I think what games have a huge opportunity to do is to bring you in the nitty-gritty of it, like in the mid of it, and like show how cruel war is, and like really show like that awfulness of it, while at the same time putting you under pressure for the strategic ability and sometimes difficult choices of sacrificing some of your men to achieve a bigger goal. But if it accomplishes both at the same time and allows you to do that, I think that's really powerful to make people realize how horrible war is.
Well, on that subject of the horrors of war, DEFCON. You played DEFCON. It's an old game now. Have you never played it, Tim?
No, I have not. I've heard about it, but
you should try it. It's just a nuclear war simulator where you place your forces, be them missiles, anti-missiles, air forces, air bases, submarines, and as you move through the game and as you get towards DEFCON 1, suddenly nuclear war kicks off, and it's gloriously presented in just the colours that are used. It is far from realistic, and then the aftermath.
It's supposed to be unrealistic because it's a throwback to the war game movie.
It is. But then at the end, afterwards, there's no fanfare, there's no chain kill, whatever killed. But it comes up and it says, you know, 3 billion killed, 4 billion killed, and it's presented in such a cold and chilling way. I think it's something which could actually be used to teach the next generation about the horrors of war. I mean, I lived through the Cold War, or certainly from the 80s onwards. I experienced what it was like to live on the brink of nuclear annihilation. It tells you just how horrific it could be. But again, it's rendered down into simple numbers, which brings us back to the situation where you enslave a population from a Roman enemy city. They're just numbers. You don't care, you know. To XCOM, where are you saving this one soldier because you have a deep emotional connection to this virtual individual, or is it because he's really, really good and you want him for the next level? And then to Frostpunk, where Victoria Smith is an individual under your care, and you have a moral obligation to ensure her welfare.
This is why I said that if you're educated about the topic on that game, you might actually enjoy it a lot more, because you know the ramification of your actions. And so, for example, if you're playing Rome Total War, and you know that slavery was such a massive part of society, you can understand why those decisions exist. Even to the point that you can understand the different rewards you have in between them. And I agree with you, Al. I think that games should be used for teaching on that. And I think strategy games are fantastic for doing this, just because they can give you like a grand perspective of things, right? So they like games like Frostpunk or XCOM, like most strategy games can give you very large perspective and from a very large time frame of stuff. And I think people can learn a lot about that, but that comes with a responsibility. Like, so you need to learn about the time period you're playing on to make sure you enjoy and you understand why things were like that, and you don't fall into the trap of, oh man, like you start to believe that maybe slavery or extermination of whole settlements weren't such a bad thing, because it saves me a lot of headache by removing these rebellious savages, right? So I think this is a very important aspect. I think games have a massive responsibility here, and that you can learn a lot from strategy games. Actually, so I started my love affair with history from strategy games, so from Age of Empires. So when I started to play those games, I was a literal shell. I had no idea the medieval ages were. I started playing World War II games before I even knew what the heck World War II was about. So I started playing like Medal of Honor, Allied Assault, the first person shooter. I was 7 or 8 when it came out. And for me, it was just like shooting guns. It was Doom, but with people instead of monsters. So those are my references. Mm-hmm. But when I started to read about those games, and when I started to study those time periods and went back and played them, I was actually able to enjoy them a lot more, because I knew what I was doing when I was storming D-Day and Medal of Honor. And when I started to play games like Company of Heroes, I already had a massive baggage of books read about World War II, and I could perfectly understand what was happening. And I think games can be a fantastic gateway into learning about history, and I think strategy games are by far the best ones to do this.
Okay, so do developers have an obligation and a responsibility to teach their players why they are doing certain things?
If you're releasing a historical game and you're selling it as an historically accurate game, you'd have an obligation to make sure it's representing history, because that's your selling point.
Well, this is taking us back to episode 3, isn't it, with the fun versus realism. So if you want to know more about fun versus realism, listen back to that episode. Tim, have you got any final thoughts for us on this subject?
Yeah, I think there's, to conclude, just a big room, a lot of room for strategy games to have more of that emotional touch and impact. And I think Frostpunk is a really nice addition to the strategy genre, and perhaps can lead the way to a bit more of that. And I look forward to it, actually.
Nuno, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's a recent game that came out from its demo. It's called Burden of Command, and I think you should give it a go, because it's a game that manages to introduce humanity into the whole World War II thing. So it puts you in the shoes of a World War II officer, and you're leading your platoon across the whole war. And as a war game / leadership RPG, I think it does a fantastic game of. This is the kind of game that you're supposed to make good decisions for your company and for your platoon and your guys. So I think it's a fantastic game, and if you would like to give a game a go, it's still not available yet, but there's a demo on Steam which you can try it. And agreeing with Tim, I think there's a lot of leeway for discussion about this in games, and I think everyone should be open to this, and I think that developers shouldn't be afraid to tackle this kind of difficult subjects, as long as they do it in a tasteful and respective manner, and they don't try to spin some weird narratives around it.
I'll leave by saying, if you haven't checked it out and you get an opportunity, try Drunk Perspective and just see what you think. I summed it up as a commentary on societal desensitization to violence. So try it out. Also, whilst you're there, have a look at criticalmovespodcast.com, where you'll find all of our social media links and a link to the Discord, so you can come and speak to us. If you've enjoyed this episode, if you absolutely disagree with Nuno, like most of us do most of the time, come and come and tell us. We would love to hear from you.
So are you guys saying that it's okay to play as, would you like to play as the Nazis? Is that it?
Moving on. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks to Nuno and Tim for joining me. Nuno, have you got anything, any plugs that you'd like to give us?
Yeah, go and visit strategyandwargaming.com.
It is the preeminent strategy and wargaming website on the internet. Guys, thanks very much. And I will see you next time, where we will be looking at the most anticipated strategy games of 2025. I can't wait. Thanks very much, guys.
Cheers, everyone.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.